Hello, friends. I am Cindy Thompson, and this is a Resilience Project. This is a space where stories are shared and possibilities are discovered. I invite you to partner with me in cultivating resilience among humans, one conversation at a time. When I consider the challenges young people might face when finishing high school, making big decisions about their future, college, dating, maybe even moving out of their family home, and all that adulting entails, I think many young adults feel the growing pains. Now, imagine overlaying a chronic condition such as neurofibromatosis type 2. This is a condition in which benign tumors grow on a person's nervous system. There is no known prevention or cure. In this episode, Camille Toms is going to help us understand what it has been like for her living with neurofibromatosis, or NF2, for most of her life, and having endured over 14 surgeries, including a few brain surgeries, most recently while completing her studies at college. What amazes me is that we as humans have this great capacity to adapt. Growing resilience is a practice and is something that is developed over time. Unfortunately, Camille has had way more than her share of opportunities to develop her practice. In this conversation, we have a unique opportunity to learn what Camille has been discovering as she learns to cohabitate with this condition. I just have such respect for anyone who is leaning into the adversities of life while figuring out how to ride those waves. Camille Toms is this amazing young woman from San Francisco, California, who has recently graduated from college with her Human Development and Family Studies certificate. Once you get a chance to hear her story, you will likely agree that this beautiful human being is going to do great things. Here is my conversation with Camille. Camille, thank you so much for joining me on a Resilience Project today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so interesting to meet people like yourself because as a human being, we all have our story of resilience, but I feel like your story is extra special. We're going to talk about your diagnosis of having neurofibromatosis type 2, and maybe you can bridge it for the listeners as to what that means and how long you've had it.
Well, I was just an average, little girl playing soccer, entering kindergarten. When I went to the principal's office in kindergarten, I was having some behavior outbursts and we didn't know what was happening really. But it all really started in first grade when I started having tongue seizures. Oh. And my tongue would just have a mind of its own. And I wasn't really thinking anything of it until I told my parents and it would happen involuntarily. And finally, primary care physician said, you know what, we should get an MRI because when things happen without us controlling it, that's a sign we got to look into things. So I had an MRI and my parents were waiting, during my MRI, and the doctor comes out to the whole waiting room and says, sorry, folks, we're going to have to postpone everyone else's MRIs because there's an emergent case. My parents like, oh, okay, that's fine. Our daughter can come back another time. And the doctor comes to my parents and says, no, it's your daughter.
Wow.
And we found it was a tangerine-sized meningioma in my frontal lobe. And they also found all the characteristics that comes along with NF2, like vestibular schwannomas in my ear canals. And that's how I was diagnosed with NF2 and introduced to my brain surgeon, Dr. Sun, who's had a big influence in my life. So yeah, I was 7 going into a surgery that could have very well, was very dangerous.
Absolutely. Any brain surgery is always a high risk. And so here you were 7, yes, having your first ever brain surgery. What a scary, yes, time that must have been for you as a little girl.
Yes, it was scary. And I have these flashback memories, like I remember a big green dinosaur in the waiting room, and I remember asking my parents, like, how big is the incision going to be? And they, like, held up their thumb and pointed finger and, like, told me, oh, not that big. And, like, looking back, I'm grateful they did that because that was not true. It was a C shape around the side of my head.
Yes.
With many stitches. But I you know, they're trying to keep me calm. And so, and that's how I learned about what I want to do for others in the future.
Yeah. Well, and you've been on quite a journey. So we want to help bridge that, because as we go along here and have this conversation, we're going to get to certainly how you discovered you wanted to work with people and help others. So Camille, this neurofibromatosis type 2, they are benign tumors that develop on your nerve endings.
That's correct. Yes.
They keep coming back. It's not a one-shot deal. That was your first one that they discovered. And how many more have you had since you were 7?
Well, I had 14 surgeries, so 14 tumors, but, you know, I look at my MRI scans and very often I will send myself into a panic attack because I like getting all the information I can get, though it's never nice to find out all the crazy things that are happening in your body when you, every other day I just feel like a 24-year-old girl, and that, you know, those MRI reports kind of put me in my place and be like, oh, that is me. Yeah. But no, I don't think I'll ever truly know how many. I mean, yes, I don't have a definite answer.
That's okay. Yeah, because I understand 14 surgeries is a ton of surgeries from 7 to 24 years of age. And some of those have been brain surgeries. Some of them have been at other places of your body that have been really difficult. And to know that with this type of diagnosis, the NF2, they are not going to stop. They're going to just keep coming. And so when you have to go through another surgery, you just know that you're bracing. You've been around that block. But how do you psych yourself up? How do you stay strong knowing that you're continuing to live with this?
Well, I had a friend. We're in the car and she was kind of, you know, having a depressed day and being like, how do you remain happy all the time? And I'm like, because the other way sucks. Because, I mean, yes, I can mope and feel sorry for myself. And I'm not going to lie, there's days that I do that in moments.
Mm-hmm.
But the life I live is beautiful. I have great parents, a great support system. I use humor around my condition. For example, like, you know, when you're saying they grow back, they do. I mean, I had a acoustic neuroma, which is when it's very far into the ear canal, pressing against your brainstem.
Okay.
On the right side. And the first time I got that removed, I went deaf in my left ear. And then 5 years later, boom, not even 5 years, it was back and it was bigger than before. I'm just like, really? Do we have to do this? And so I just got pissed. Like, I wasn't even like moping really. I was just kind of like, do we have to do this again? So my big thing now is, did you get it all? Did you clear out everything? Because this one little tiny cell can just have abnormal growth of cells.
Well, and I can appreciate, I think many of us would get angry in times. Sometimes you're sad and sometimes you're just frustrated and angry at this moment or in those moments, but you have found a way to kind of accept it, keep working through it.
Yeah.
And you might go on that roller coaster again and dip into those places momentarily, but you're also finding a way to get out of them.
Yes.
I want to learn more about that, Camille, but I wanted to mention that a big part of this is that it does cause some dizziness for you, some tinnitus and balance issues. Because it is often related to the inner ear because of the location.
Yes. I've always struggled with my balance, but I really hit hard at age 12 because that's really when I had my first ear canal vestibular system tumor removed.
Okay.
And then a few years down that line, I got my vestibular nerve completely cut.
Oh.
First it was severed and then it got cut. I make jokes that sometimes I look like a drunk person without even having anything.
Yes.
But I use a walker. And at first I was struggling with that. I'm going to come into the social situation and all they're going to see is the walker. But I'm like, you know what? The walker keeps me safe. And it helps me get to where I'm going. I'm going places. So I will accept the help. And right now, actually, real rhyme or reason, my balance has very much improved. And I'm walking without the walker a lot lately. So
Awesome. Awesome. So, Camille, maybe can you share what it was like as an adolescent having this, going to school, knowing that so often youth are really wanting to fit in? They want to feel normal, quote unquote. They want to feel like they're just like everybody else. And teenagers often feel like people are already looking at them and that they're on stage just based on development. Tell me what it was like for you going to school and having this and maybe needing a walking aid.
Well, throughout my elementary, middle school, high school, I got by without a walking aid. It was really in college where that hit. But all throughout my elementary, middle, and high school, I had a 504 plan where I met my teachers. I was allowed to, leave class whenever, do as a nurse. And at 15, I was dealing with crippling anxiety
Okay.
that had initially hit me, and then later I went through other bouts, but it all happened at 15 because of hormones coming of age, my
Sure.
life, and there's a lot of happy moments that happened in high school that I feel were clouded by anxiety,
Okay.
unfortunately. And so that, it kind of takes away the joys.
Yes.
I remember doing yoga in high school. And we would have to go out and do balance exercises. And I would dread it so much. We had to walk on this little curb. And I was like, oh, they're all gonna see me. Like, I'm gonna fall over all the time. And finally, I just like to save face. I'm like, you know what? I can't do this. This is not in the cards for me. I have to do another activity. And so the teacher did listen to me, although there I was doing a different activity. And all my other classmates could see me. Oh, she's doing a different activity. Like, why is it happening? Like, what's wrong with her? And so, that being in high school, you never want that
Of course.
because that's our biggest fear is other people noticing us.
Yeah.
That was tough.
Well, and it's a reminder, Camille, that the listeners may not know yet that these are invisible for the most part. So your classmates would
Yes.
not have seen anything visible to indicate that you had these tumors growing in your body. You're trying to fit in. You're not telling everybody your story. You're not
Yes.
exactly announcing what you're going through. And it's a very private thing. You shouldn't have to, but they wouldn't have understood that this is a reason why you needed to adapt your activities.
Yeah, and so they're just like, what's going on with Camille? Like, she's just like us. Like, why is she doing a separate activity? And so that's where I love the invisibility of my condition, though it sometimes creates like a mask that I can go through life with.
Yes.
But then it doesn't let people see the struggles that I go through on the daily because I look and carry on with life. Like I am fine and capable. Like people forget,
Yes.
my life is much harder. I always
Yeah.
joke to my brothers, like, could I just trade bodies with you for a day? And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that to you actually because I don't think you could handle it. And my brother said something really cute to me. He's like, I would do it in an instant.
Aww.
And that's very sweet. Because just to that question, I don't know if I'd want to do it because I'm used to my body. And if I ever experience anything different, I don't know if I'd want to come back. But yet I love it's a strange question because I love my body. I wouldn't want to do that
Oh,
in the end.
Camille, that is so amazing, really, because so many of us pick our bodies apart. So many of us who are healthy and well will critique and micromanage different parts of our bodies, wishing, especially women, I'm going to say, but men as well, wishing we had a different body, wishing we looked slimmer, wishing we had different hair. And here you are living with NF2 every day. And certainly get tired of it and sometimes wish you could just escape from that. But I can hear the wisdom of really learning to live with your body, learning to accept and work with your body.
I have to just understand, like, this is gonna make me tired, and then I'll rest. Like you did a big thing. Like, now we're gonna rest and take time to recuperate, and then we can continue. Because I'm young and active, and I want to do things that all my peers are doing, yet some of them are just out of the question for me. And momentarily, at times I forget that. So like someone wanted to go rollerblading with me and I'm like, yes, I'm in. And my brain talked before my body's like, wait a second. Like, let's not do that. We need to reassess that. Let's do something within our wheelhouse. Because my brain's just like, go, go, go. Like, even when I'm walking with people and they're like, you know, walking at their pace and I'm trailing behind because it takes so much longer for me to like get to their level. My brain wants to be with you guys.
Yes.
So it's like the 24-year-old in me, who is me, wants to get there. And that's when the challenge with my body and my mind clash. But I just bring them together.
Well, I wondered how you do that. Do you sit and just have a talk with yourself? Like, okay, right? Let's get the party going here. We got the brain and we got the body meeting up here. Mm-hmm. Let's have a little conversation and make sure we're on the same page.
Yes. Well, what I was missing in my medical care for the longest time was therapy. And after my pelvic surgery, where they removed a small football, a Nerf football.
Wow.
Size. They cut a nerve in my leg. And so that's what's impacted my mobility. But then that sent me into another anxiety spiral. And I found this lovely therapist who's teaching me and guiding me through this relationship I have with my body and my mind.
Beautiful.
Because I had this ideal body that I thought I was getting. And I keep dealing with losses, which is inevitable, which is the cruel fate of NF2, you know, takes things. But I can, you know, get sad and go, woe is me. Like, NF2 sucks, it's taking all these things from me. But then you just adapt and change your lifestyle. And for instance, like I have my left hand due from arm tumors. It's kind of clenched. And for listeners, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like a claw.
Yeah.
Like my fingers don't outstretch. And my dad said to me like, oh, would you like to get that surgery done? Like, you can cut it off for all I care. Like, that's not my biggest concern at the moment. Like, I'll get around it. I was showing him I was eating a Twix bar.
Yeah.
And just like biting it and just sucking the chocolate out. And he's like, well, you should learn how to open it. And I'm like, I'm just going to get to the chocolate.
A girl with priorities.
Yeah. Yes. And I have this cool little hand splint that gives me my pointer finger use so I can type.
Oh, good.
And so, you know, I'm just adapting. And at first it was really hard. I had long hair. I was always getting into battles with myself because I loved putting my hair up in a ponytail. And I haven't been able to do that. And every time I do, I just get frustrated. So then one day I just cut it. Like right now, it's like chin length.
Yes.
Because it's eliminated frustration that I don't need to deal with when I have so many other frustrations that are more important.
Yeah, you're deciding which things are the bigger things that I can deal with right now. And you only have so much capacity, I would think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get very emotionally tired at times.
Well, Camille, what I've wondered is, what have you been learning about yourself? What has surprised you about what you have been able to handle since you were a little girl?
I guess I'm surprised by this when I hear others' accounts on the same things I'm going through. It doesn't surprise me while I'm living it, but then when they're telling me about their experience, I'm like, wow, well, I dealt with that very well. And I get an infusion, an immunotherapy infusion that helps slow the growth of my tumors.
Okay.
And I was recently getting an MRI, and they were putting an IV in my right arm, because that's the arm I always volunteer.
Okay.
Even though it's my dominant arm, it's just because the left arm has a tumor in it. So I guess I'm subconsciously trying to be nice to that arm.
Mm.
But I forgot that the day prior to that MRI, I had blood work done and they had gone in that same vein. So they're going into the vein again and they're like, we're having issues. And I'm like, well, just move on to the next arm. And they weren't, because they probably just didn't want to, you know, piss me off and you know, just be like, no, we're going to try to make this one work because, you know, we don't want to put you through enough pain. I'm like, I can tell you for a fact that one's not going to work. Change it. And then finally, after like advocating, I finally changed it, got it right in. And the nurses left me with a huge bruise that developed in that right arm, which I haven't gotten for several years. And I was like, that didn't have to happen. It didn't like hurt me. I was fine. But I mean, I guess it's kind of funny. I've become a professional pin cushion, if you want to say.
I bet.
I mean, and my brother, I sometimes don't understand. Like, we're in the same family. He's my blood brother. And he has developed a deathly fear of needles. And I'm like, how are we related? Like, I almost feel like I didn't do my job. Do you see what your sister does? Like, it's not a big deal, dude. Like, and then I hear these stories of these tattooed men, like, get so freaked out over this tiny little needle. And so I guess I'm surprised because I deal with a lot of pain.
I bet.
And I forget about, but there's not a normal life to have where you deal with so much pain. And my therapist always, she says, well, we're all suffering through life. And I'm like, no, I don't like that word. Like, I've only suffered once. And I've lived a life where, yes, I have gone through a lot. But yeah, if you want to say it, I shouldn't have been put through, but hey, it's the life I got. And I'm like, no, I only suffered one time. And that was recently. I just had a recent brain surgery last November because fear of mine came true. When my cerebral spinal fluid, which if you don't know, is the fluid that runs along your spine.
Yes.
It started to leak through my incision in my head, which is a lovely thought.
Mm.
And when it's happening to you, I was like, is this okay? Is this okay? And they couldn't give me a clear answer. And they're like, you know what? We're just going to, you know, fix it through surgery. I think it was a day out of the last surgery, which was 17 hours.
Wow.
Then I was like, you know what? It's fine. So they put this lumbar stent in, which is kind of like an epidural. It's in that same space.
Okay.
But except epidural is like a shot, right? One-time thing. This shunt was placed and I couldn't move. And it was causing me excruciating pain. That one night, I had to have like morphine on a continuous drip because I was shaking. The nurses like angst about me moving because my body's like, we can't do this anymore. So that was suffering.
Yeah.
But the worst part of this suffering was watching my dad, who spent nights with me. My mom spent the days, my dad spent the nights. And I'll tell you, I think my dad saw more pain than I was in than my mom.
Which is hard. Any parent does not want to watch their child suffer.
Yeah. So I learned that, like, when I was suffering, it was awful. But what was worse than that was watching my dad watch me suffer, knowing that he couldn't do anything to fix the pain I was in.
Mm.
And I think that by far is the worst moment of my medical journey thus far. And I never want to go back there. But it helped me learn. But I don't like when people say over-suffering all the time in life. Because how I classify suffering is different. Mm-hmm. And I don't like viewing life like that. I'm a very optimistic person. Like, I always wear yellow. My email tag is Fred Sunshine. Like, ask any of my friends. I'm very optimistic, joyful. I love life. So, no, I don't like to live in this pessimistic space that we're suffering through life.
Mm-hmm. If I were to capture what you're saying, Camille, it would sound to me like you choose. You make a choice every day to focus on the sunshine, to wear yellow, to try to find more helpful ways through those low periods, through the anxiety and mm-hmm. moments. And so it sounds like you're actively making a choice every day.
Yeah. Yeah, like, when I wake up and I'm nauseous for reasons unknown to me, I don't love it. I don't love being in the unknown. I'm like, why is this happening? And I'm sure my parents will tell you, you know, they hear things that are, you know, physical ailments I'm going through more often than they hear, oh, I'm good.
Sure.
That's just the way it is. I mean, I was going to say it's sad, but it's sad to me because, you know, again, I want my body and my mind to sync up and be like, mm-hmm. we're good. And certain days I have plans and I push past any discomfort I'm in because I want to, because I'm going to live the life I want. And my therapist just said to me, like, make a plan and no matter how you feel, like, stick to the plan. And like, certain days I can do that. And certain days I'm like, you know what? Thank you, therapist, for those words of wisdom, but I don't have it today. I notice when I, you know, when I don't, or when I kind of do, so I'm going to try anyway.
Yeah. And I can hear the self-compassion as well, Camille, that you can take that advice and you can apply it when you have the clarity and the energy, but nobody knows what it feels like in your body except you. And so I also respect that you also need to just someday say, I just don't have it today. And knowing that when you rest, you might have more energy the next day to move ahead and take some more steps.
Yes, it's really vital to rest in my life. And I hope other people are listening that rest is not a bad thing. I feel like it's, you know, if you do nothing in your day, you might feel shame about that. Like, oh, I should have gotten this done and I didn't. But you're helping yourself out for tomorrow. You're helping yourself out from all the things you did beforehand. And like, I even struggle with that because I'm like, oh, like, what have I been doing all day? Like, nothing. I've been watching TV or just drinking teas and being outside. I haven't done anything. But I'd like to work to change those thoughts in my mind and in society that we're not all different abilities. And I live in a very able-bodied family where, you know, the expectations are kind of higher. Like, we're doing this today, we're doing that today, we're doing this, and I get tired. But rest is not bad. We're being kind to ourselves, and we're not just following the herd because that can be detrimental to us.
Oh, wise words. I appreciate that you're sharing that. And I can take a page from your book, Camille, because I'm not very good at that. So thank you for that reminder.
Yes, I think we all need to be, even me, while I'm saying it, we all need to be reminded of it.
It's a practice, isn't it?
Yes.
When we practice at something, it means we don't always get it right, but we are mindful of it as being a practice that we can kind of work at each day or one day a week, whatever we decide. Camille, I want the listeners to also learn about you that you have just recently graduated from your Human Development and Family Studies degree, and that was just in the spring, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was in May.
During your degree, you also had two surgeries.
During my whole college career, I had four surgeries, and two of those were major brain surgeries.
How does somebody work at college studies and have brain surgeries? Tell me, how is that possible?
I mean, when you say that to me, I'm like, I did that? Yeah, I did that. But going back to, like, I was entering my sophomore year, I had my second acoustic stroma removed, the one that had grown back, and I was mad at it. And I went through a lot of hard emotional times. I had a month to recover before school starting, and my parents always said to me, you know, you could take the semester off, but, you know, I think if you want to do it, you know, go for it. And you can always, like, if you're there and you're having a good time, you can by all means come home, well, press pause and resume the next semester. And I came into that year with my own apartment with roommates. And they're like, you know, I wasn't doing much at home. I wasn't going to be doing much at school. Well, except, you know, walking across a big campus going to classes.
Oh, right.
Well, I had to use a walking pole. I brought them, but I was like too nervous to use them. And I look back, I should have used the damn poles because I had just had brain surgery.
Hello. Yes.
Yes. And my mom was always saying, I'm like, what if they ask me about my poles? Then you can tell them that you had brain surgery. But I was always so, like, wanted to look as independent as I could. And I met the greatest friends I could ever meet that year.
Did you?
I did. And one of these friends, I connected with her because I make friends empathetically. Like, I made a friend who had brain surgery. And I immediately was like, okay, we get each other. Yeah. And, like, we were meshed by the hip within 3 days of knowing each other. Because I found a link in her, because I look for the empathetic links in people. And that's what helped me through that year. I went to a Halloween party with these friends and I was dancing and went down a zip line and jerked and I experienced extreme pain. And I was like, you're okay, you're okay. And then I missed a step going down and I just broke because something delicately was happening in my head. And all these friends gathered around like, okay, we're going to get you some water. And I hadn't really opened up the extent of what happened. And when I tell them months later, they're like, why did you let us take you to that party? We just had brain surgery 3 months ago because I am living my life. Because that's not what I do. Because I was living the college life.
Yes.
And you were by my side. You were keeping me safe. And yeah, I got, you know, some tears were shed. But I'm the kind of person, I push past my comfort zone. Sometimes it gets me in trouble. Sometimes But then sometimes I make great memories from it. I guess because I had momentum.
Oh.
In my life, I had the college momentum. I didn't want to fall behind my friends. They were all supporting me. Again, a really good support system is needed because they're always checking on me and, you know, finding my passion. I really wanted to get that degree.
Yeah. Well, and that's a great segue, Camille, to what you want to do next. Tell the listeners what your ultimate goal is.
My ultimate goal is to become a child life therapist. And they work within pediatric hospitals on certain departments, the NICU or the neurosurgery unit or MRI radiology or oncology, anything that's happening. And they help pediatric patients, because it can go all the way up to 18, cope with the challenges of being in the hospital, because the hospital is viewed often as an unknown, scary place. And through my studies, I've learned that different age groups think differently about this hospital experience and have misconceptions on what is going on. And, you know, with my surgery, I wish I had the opportunity to explore what was going to happen to my body before my brain surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I can bring so much empathetic knowledge and so much patient experience to this job in helping them cope with fears and unknowns that they have and helping them reframe the narrative, like what is actually going to happen, what you're going to look like. Here's what we can do to make the experience better. Like, they have these little buzzy toys that kind of distract from the pain and offering choices in these scary situations. So that's my ultimate goal, and I'm working towards it. I just graduated, as you said, although I'm not done with schooling. I still need to get my emphasis and get my graduate degree.
Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that what you're saying there is really heard, because you are going places, girl. And like you said, you, Camille, have found a lot of value in connecting with others. For example, your friend in college who had the brain surgery. When you connect with others who get it, who have been through something similar, there's so much value in that, in knowing that you're not alone and that others will understand a little bit of what you've been through.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing a website as well, Camille. And what would you like listeners to know about your website?
Well, since I'm not a child life therapist as of yet, I want to use all the expertise and experience I have now, because as of now, it's not like I have nothing. I have plenty of patient experience. I graduated with this degree. I'm a patient advocate. I'm on the junior board for the Children's Tumor Foundation. It's www.solishines.org. And it's sharing my stories of what I've gone through and answering the unknown questions that doctors or your family can't answer for you. Although I most likely have gone through similar situations, and it's just where help anyone else who's going through big medical challenges, who's been through similar things, and we can connect and collaborate and talk through any of these challenges together. And I also have different links to like what I've been through with anxiety, with dating, with different tubes put in my body, with different surgeries, like you name it. So, I mean, in the future, I would like this to become a big forum. But right now, you're able to like book an individual session with me, Zoom, if you want to talk, or just comment on my videos. It's a website I wish was around when I was young.
Yes.
Going through it, because I couldn't find this website, and so I wanted to create it.
I love it.
And that's what Solely Shine is. It's just helping other people know they're not alone in their, you know, medical challenges, and I'm right alongside them. And
beautiful.
Yeah, I'm just really excited about the website, and so I hope you check it out.
So, Camille, I believe you have a journal entry that you might be interested in sharing with our listeners.
Okay. I am 24 years old, living in my childhood home, feeling like an adult most of the time until I don't. I mean, it's hard to relinquish your full adult self when you're in an environment where you don't really need to be one. Do I need to work to survive? No. Do I need to make my own meals? No. Do I need to be fully independent? Also, no. I was in college. I made that transition from being dependent to independent. I made the biggest freaking jump you could make. I didn't half-ass it. I went from living with my family in California to attending college in Utah, at the University of Utah, where I knew no one. A whole new, fresh palette that had never been touched by Camille Toms. I was separated by the life I knew, not only by state lines, but by time itself. PST to mountain time. Of course, I was nervous about this, but it also gave me this whole new lease on life. I had my own state. No one knew me. Do you know how cool that is? No one knew my life story. I could write a new, fresh chapter here, a novella unattached from the whole novel. You could read this story as a separate entity from the other. Recently, a guy dropped by my house. I had no freaking clue who he was, or he knew who I was. Hell, I could make a very educated guess about the entirety of what he knew. Camille, daughter of Roland, had a brain tumor at 7, and since then, gone through numerous traumatic medical events. She persists. She's always smiling. Is it cancer she has? I'm guessing his inner dialogue around me went something like that. He comes into my house, and I say, "Hi, I'm Camille." But before I could even finish introducing myself, and I'm reaching out my hand to shake his, he envelopes me into a hug. "Oh, okay, that's nice. It's lovely. He cares. I am no longer Camille Toms, 24, cool daughter of Roland. I am now 24-year-old Camille Toms, who dealt with some hard stuff, and she is being treated delicately." Those are my thoughts that are racing in my sensitive mind and are jumping to these conclusions, and these are highly likely wrong. However, and I'm just going to say it, could you tell me directly what that hug meant to you, sir? I love hugs. They're great. Only thing that pops into my mind is that with that hug, NF2 is being addressed. Every time NF2 is addressed, I notice this, I kind of change or resume said role. Yes, I'm doing okay. You know, ups and downs. No surgery on the horizon. Thank you for your support. In a different context, it would have been fine. NF2 was far from my mind, and then suddenly, there was again. I like to feel like I have control over when and where NF2 appears. I mean, it's in my body, I know that, it never goes away. But in my mind, it does. Mental states are a different thing. I notice everyone has their own way of addressing me. I'm starting to learn through therapy that I shouldn't be upset how people choose to address me. I come with two different schemas attached to my person. One of them, 24-year-old daughter. The other, diagnosed with NF2, deals with a lot of medical challenges, never free from surgeries. So the way I think about it is sometimes people get stuck between them or choose to use the wrong one. It's how they're feeling that day. It's not about me. It's how they feel comfortable talking to a girl who's been through so much. That's my...
Wow. My goodness, that's amazing. And what I hear, Camille, is just the importance of seeing you first.
Yes.
Not the NF2 first.
Yeah, just see me. I don't need to be told I'm so strong. I know. Thank you. But people don't understand that sometimes you're so strong hurts me as well.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because I wasn't thinking about NF2 until you said that. And I get it. You know, that's a very nice thing to say. And I'm sure maybe you don't know how to deal with me or how to address me because I'm an anomaly.
Well, and what it makes me think about, Camille, is how could people listening who may meet someone like yourself, how would you recommend they approach that person?
And let me shake your hand. Like, and tell me why you're hugging me. Like, I already know why you're hugging me. But the one thing I will tell you, I don't like being pitied. Do not pity me.
Yeah.
Because I don't want that. See me. I am very strong. But see me as a whole thing.
Yes.
So, I mean, get to know me. Just talk to me. I'm pretty open. I'll tell you everything. But if you're just meeting me, get to know me and then I'll tell you everything.
Well, and if I were to meet you, I'd say, "Hey, Camille, you just graduated from university. Hey, what are you hoping to do with that? What are your life goals?" And it would have nothing to do with the NF2.
Yes. I don't want to say that, no, let's never address NF2. But that's not all who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it makes me look really cool that I've overcome so much with NF2 as part of my life, and I wouldn't have it any other way because it wouldn't be who I am today. Without NF2. So I do love it. There is love there.
Aw, it's such an interesting mix as I listen, Camille.
Yeah, it is.
And I can just see the many complexities to this in all that you do navigate, but wanting to choose that part of your life that you want to celebrate, that part that you're learning about yourself, continuing to grow, focused on helping others. And yes, you'll continue to navigate and work through these as you have been, but that's not all of you. And I love that reminder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about your resiliency practices?
Well, I really think it's important to find your coping mechanisms and to understand when you had too much and that it's okay to take your time out and just use yourself because yourself is the only one that understands. And I have a journal that says it's a Camille thing you wouldn't understand. And it's true because we have to learn to be our own best friend because, yeah, it can be sad. It can be looked at as lonely that we're the only ones who will ever know what it's truly like to be us, or be your person. But I make blankets. I love making blankets. I love painting. Painting's great. Writing. I recommend therapy to anyone. If you have the means, I mean, I know therapy is not always easy to come by, but we're just talking to a good friend, finding a good Netflix show. Just turning your mind off for just a certain length of time can be really nice. You don't think about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Crafts really are great. I do paint by numbers, and they're great because I don't really have to think about what I'm painting.
Yes.
They're already mapped out for you. So, I mean, that's a recommendation I have. Go get them paint by numbers because you don't have to think about what you're painting. It tells you exactly where which color goes. It's very relaxing and soothing, and I opened a tea business to sell my blankets, and all the profits go to Jonas Tumor Foundation. And it's called Soleil Shines, but there's two S's at the end, so it's like Soleil Shines.
Excellent. That's good to know. Well, thank you, Camille, for being on our project today to share your story, your vulnerabilities. But I really, really respect the candid and honest way in which you have shared your navigation of this and your insights. So thank you for being here all the way from San Francisco.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking with you.
My pleasure. I've had the privilege of meeting a number of individuals over the years that have faced so many challenges and adversities. What has stood out for me, however, is in the tenacity, perseverance, and commitment that many of these individuals have displayed. Camille has all of these strengths and more. I think she is also very resourceful. Not only is she learning as much as she can about NF2, but she has also brought on a team of people to help her navigate this part of the journey along the way. For example, you can hear the value of having a counselor to explore coping skills, develop a healthy mindset, and explore possibilities. Having this team ensures that Camille is not a lone traveler on her journey and that she has a whole team to support her. Camille also discovered the benefits of letting others help her. As she suggested, she is going places, so why not let others help her get there? Whether it is moving away for college, attending that Halloween party, or assessing whether she is up for rollerblading, Camille is embracing all of the milestones and adventures of a 24-year-old. This reminds me of a section of Seligman's book titled Flourish. Positive psychology invites us to be drawn by the future, not driven by the past. Camille is deciding how she is going to cohabitate with this roommate called NF2, what her personal goals are for the future, while also pursuing her passions. She is intentional in looking forward and not dwelling on how or why she has this very unruly roommate called NF2. A key ingredient to Camille's resiliency practice seems to be in her mindset. How many of us could say that we love our body, love our life, even if we were living with this kind of condition? Camille is choosing sunshine to remain optimistic as much as possible because, as she said, the other way sucks. Here are a few more of Camille's resiliency practices. First of all, it's vital to rest. When she does rest, it is helping her out for tomorrow. Secondly, be kind to yourself and, in fact, be your own best friend. Thirdly, don't just follow the herd. Pay attention to your path. And fourth, find ways to turn your mind off. And Camille had a few suggestions that she uses for that. I think it is so insightful for Camille to also be in alignment with her body and her mind. The 24-year-old Camille would be up for anything, but her body has a very different plan. In listening to her body, she is more likely to trust in herself. Camille also raised a solid point of helping us understand the importance of truly seeing her as a person first. It is through the kindness and caring that we might draw attention to the NF2 first. She does not want to be pitied, but invites people to talk to her, get to know her, and truly see Camille. This is a beautiful reminder moving forward, and I can appreciate that she would want to also set aside this intruder for a while and celebrate all that is Camille. The other beautiful thing about Camille is her genuine heart for helping others as she pursues a career as a child and youth therapist. Given her shiny personality, determination, and resilience, I believe Camille has a wealth of gifts to offer. These qualities and characteristics are not something that can be easily taught, but perhaps already part of Camille's secret sauce. Spawned from my conversation with Camille, I have a couple of questions for you as the listener. What are you currently living with that is causing you discomfort? Is it something you have control over, or is it something you need to accept? If it is something you have little to no control over, what are three things you can do to work with it? And in doing so, how might this alter your struggle or experience of suffering? Finally, I would like to leave you with a quote from Dr. Bruce Perry in Oprah's book, What Happened to You? Trauma and adversity are gifts, but the cost of wisdom can be high. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Resilience Project. We would not be doing this podcast without you. If you or someone you know has an inspirational story or is helping to build resilience in their community, please email me at cindy@aresilienceproject.com. In fact, email me either way. I would love to hear from you. My hope is to feature an episode periodically on your letters of resilience. I'm very interested in hearing your story of how you have tackled hard things and what worked for you. With your permission, I hope to share some of these stories along the way with our listeners. Also, check out my website, aresilienceproject.com, to learn more about our amazing guests. Your presence here is important because together we are cultivating a village of resilient individuals. You are creating a space for their stories to be shared and a sacred space for learning to occur. I also have a favor. I would love for you to go to your preferred podcast platform, rate and review the podcast so that we will know how we're doing. I also would like to express my gratitude to the amazing team of volunteers that have jumped on board to support this project. You will find